Welcome to the Wonder What Podcast. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Rob.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you are enjoying the podcast. This is our fourth one in the reboot of it.
And I always ask this, but how's it going so far, Robbie?
And I always say, so far, so good, I guess, because I really don't know.
Probably because nobody's listening to it. We should be okay.
I guess a few people have talked to us. We have not gotten, I don't think, any official emails about it, but we've had a few people.
No death threats, anyway, so far.
That's good.
And that's always a good thing.
Yeah, we're happy about that. But we've enjoyed doing it. It's been kind of a fun thing to put together, and it's probably been a lot more work for you because you have to do all the technical stuff.
No, I don't mind that. I actually enjoy that. That's always been my fun thing, is to go there and play around with the technical files, Adobe stuff. So that's always a blast.
That's cool. So, I know nothing about it, so I'm glad that you like it.
Yes, I do. So what all's been going on this week at Eastgate, Robbie?
Well, coming up, we have communion, which we do the last Sunday of every month. And I don't think we've ever really talked about that, like why we do it. And probably some people already know that. Maybe most people do. But I thought it might be good to talk about it.
Yeah. So the last Sunday of every month is the time when we celebrate. There are so many different words for it. We can celebrate the communion. We can celebrate the Lord's table. We can celebrate the communion of the bread and cup. We can celebrate the Eucharist.
They're all basically referring to the same thing, right?
Basically. It's all basically talking about the thing that Jesus instituted the night that he was betrayed and he was with his disciples. And we just taught about this last Sunday when he was celebrating the Passover meal and instituted this refashioning of the Passover meal into something that pointed towards not only the mission that he accomplished on our behalf, but the ongoing mission that we're still a part of, this new Exodus that provides a new covenant relationship with God and leads us into a new world. So
that's awesome. And we do it a little bit differently.
We do.
Maybe than you've done it as you've been raised in traditional church.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that it all started with a conversation that I had with Dennis Gallagher years ago. How many years ago was that? That maybe over 10.
I'm thinking at least, yes.
10 years ago or more, Dennis Gallagher and I started. We used to have a message board. Remember that for the website?
Oh my gosh.
A little message
board?
Yes,
I'd forgotten about that.
And so he had posed a question on there about Passover, and I didn't know what he was talking about. I thought he was trying to say we should celebrate Passover, so I was getting all defensive and weird. But then he made it clear, no, I'm not saying we should celebrate Passover, but is what we do on Sunday mornings what Jesus had in mind when he instituted this ritual? And I thought that was fascinating because I really hadn't thought about it because, you know, you grow up doing this. You didn't really grow up in church, but I did.
I did not, but I was familiar with the concept. I had gone to a few churches over the years, and so I was not confused really about it. I would say I probably didn't have a full understanding of it, but it was basically the traditional way
right. That
people celebrated communion.
And so Dennis's whole thing was, did Jesus have in mind that we should all be sitting in rows, staring at the back of the other person's head, individualistic in this, taking our tiny piece of cracker and thimbleful of juice and doing this thing that had no community bearing at all? And when you juxtaposition that against the Passover meal or against what Paul is describing in 1 Corinthians 11, they don't look the same. What we do in most church traditions doesn't look like what they're describing in those things. And so that got us down the path of doing Burning House. You remember Burning House?
Those were good days. I loved them. They were a lot of work. They made us very tired by the end of the day as staff, but I love them.
They were a lot of fun. In fact, we're thinking about doing, if you're not familiar with what we're talking about, several years back, we used to do what we called Burning House. We didn't do a communion service during a regular Sunday morning service, but we had a special service on Sunday night where we would celebrate the communion. We just did worship songs together. We'd pray for each other. And I'm really thinking we need to do a Burning House revival meeting just to kind of reconnect with that. Because that, I don't know, there was a lot of fun in that.
It was. And I think it would bring back a lot of good memories for people. I guess I'm coming back to why we ever stopped it. But I think that it was time.
It was time because we started to kind of get into a rote thing. You know, it was very, when we first started doing it, it was very new, very unusual. It felt very fresh and and spontaneous a lot of times. And then as all things go like this, once you keep doing it over and over again,
right.
it takes on a certain mechanical sense to it. And I think that we all got to that point where we're like, not sure that our hearts are in this. And did you just hear me burp? Is that why you're looking at me?
I'm sorry.
I can't help it. I burped. But why we were wondering why we're doing this. We started.
That's right. And I do remember too that we noticed it was a lot of the same people coming to Burning House, which is fine, of course, but there was also a whole group of people that didn't come to Burning House and therefore never got to partake of communion.
Right. And so that was the thing that was different, though, about what we were doing at Burning House, which then translated to our Sunday mornings. Instead mm-hmm. of passing out little, instead of having people distribute the elements of communion, the bread and the cup, to people as they sat patiently waiting for it, we on the Burning House things broke the meeting apart. We had tables set up with baskets of bread all distributed through the whole place. And you'd get up and you'd pour from a pitcher, as much as you wanted. You'd grab a piece of bread.
And you would help others do the same thing too. Often there'd be like, six or eight different tables that had the elements on them.
Yeah.
And so someone would often do that for the group and hand things out. And that added a little more to the community element too.
And there is something about getting up from your seat and mixing it up with the group that mm-hmm. makes a difference. So on Sunday mornings, we've changed it now to where people go to we have tables in the front and tables in the back, and people can make their way around the building to get the elements and then hopefully interact with people. Because to me, that's the whole thing. What Paul is talking about in 1 Corinthians 11 is all about making sure that we are recognizing the Lord's body in this, that the community of Christ is coming to the forefront, and this becomes a community event and celebration of what it is that Jesus has done, but also what we're a part of.
And I think it's super important to do that and to go there and remember it. I just as we're talking about this, I was remembering, and I'm sure it was a year ago. So my granddaughter was about 3, Samantha, and usually the kids are gone in their classrooms during communion and everything, but she was there early and she was asking me what all this was for. And so I remember trying to explain it in 3-year-old terms that, well, we take a piece of bread because it helps us remember that Jesus's body was broken and he died for us on the cross. And we take a little juice because we want to remember that he shed his blood for us so that we could be saved and we could live again. And she thought about that for a second. She goes, Jesus didn't fully die for me. He just was on the cross, but he didn't all the way die for me. And I could tell that it was a very painful concept for her. She didn't like the thought of him completely dying for her. And, but as we,
I think we all struggle with that.
I do. Yeah. It's not a simple concept. I think,
or even liking the idea. I mean, being able to embrace the idea that Jesus would die for me, that he would go that far.
Try to think about that for more than just a few minutes, and it just is almost overwhelming.
It is.
So anyway, that's communion, and that's coming up. We do that now the last Sunday of every month.
The last Sunday. So if there's a month with 5 Sundays, it'll still always fall on the last Sunday of the month. Usually you can figure it's the 4th Sunday, but like this month has 5 Sundays, so it lands on the last one.
And we also encourage families to participate. Rob always states that he's not uncomfortable or does not have a problem if children want to imitate that. It's not like, I don't want to sound really negative about this, but it's not like we're worried about someone partaking without really understanding maybe the mm-hmm. full concept.
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, a lot of that comes back to church history and things that were established during the time of the early church as people were trying to carve out what it meant to be a part of this kind of community. But For me, rules have been made over the years in terms of who can take the communion. And I realize it's an important thing. We want to understand there's weight behind it, but at the same time, it's symbolic. It's a symbolic ritual. And if somebody's doing it and they don't know why they're doing it, or they're doing it and they're not doing it for the right reasons, it's still between them and God. I don't
That's
know
right.
that that's something that we have to create community rules about to try to enforce. There's something about that that seems contrary to what we see happening with the explosion of the gospel in this world.
Absolutely. I think that sometimes something that happens with Christians, at least it did with me, as you grow into your Christianity is you tend to be a little superstitious about things. Oh, and you get kind of worried about, oh, we can't do this because the boogeyman's going to come. Yeah. And I think that's crept into communion a little bit too.
Oh, it has.
Just need to
it has. Absolutely.
Relax.
And those are some of those things when you start really tracing back the history of it, trying to find it. You know, my whole thing has always been, if you want to get to the truth of a matter, keep going backwards, try to find out what is, get to the closest source of this river that you can. And oftentimes you're going to get back to the Middle Ages with a lot of things, a lot of doctrines, a lot of concepts that came out of the Middle Ages that really need to be reconsidered, you know,
which takes a little
rethought.
Work.
It takes
so not
work,
everybody's willing to do that, but it's a good pursuit if you can find it in yourself to do.
Because the easier thing to do is to say, ah, this is the way we've always done it, and it has to be the right way. And I say,
it could be different.
Yeah. I say all kinds of things. I not only say, meh, but I also say,
doing. Yeah, a lot of cartoon sounds happen in this house and other places. Okay, do we have any small group news?
Well, yeah, you know, if anybody is interested in what small groups do meet, either within the confines of the Eastgate building or in people's homes, you can check. There's always, back by the info hub, there's always a small table there that has some of the flyers about what meetings there are. There are, the of course, the small groups specifically designed for specific groups, such as the men's. Specifically designed, you're looking at me like, what are you talking about? Hey, I'm talking off the fly here. It's specifically designed for, what would you say if you didn't say specific groups?
I would say check the wall where we keep the small group flyers for the specific groups that meet.
I still like the way I said it, but yes, you couldn't have said it better yourself, but you tried.
I did. So we have the men's group, we have a women's group, we have...
When does the men's group meet, Robbie?
Well, they meet on Monday nights, pretty much every Monday night at Eastgate.
At
7
o'clock.
But all that information is...
There,
on the flyers.
Yes.
Yeah. And eventually we'll be on our website.
That's it is on our website. Some of those are on the website, but some of the specifics in terms of contact is not there yet. We'll get that.
They change a little bit too. They fluctuate. We have a women's group that meets once a month for women's Bible study. We have Eastgate Middles, which is, I think, for 30 to 40 year olds.
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
And they meet sort of randomly, but generally once a month. There's the 17 to 30 year olds that meet at Matt and Janelle's house. And there's always the opportunity for you all to start a group.
Yes.
If you'd like.
That's one of the things we've tried to find our footing on this a lot over the years trying to do this. And it's, we've gone through various phases where we're very organic with it. Other times we try to very closely manage it and set everybody up and do training and all these things. So far, we've had a lot of difficulty getting traction on that. We're not exactly sure why, but we're always open to whatever might come along. And so if something seems interesting to you, you would like to start a home group of some kind, then
email us.
Email us at eastgatepcb@gmail.com, and we would be glad to look at that, consider it, pray about it, see what we can do to get
we being Blake.
That thing going. We being Blake.
And we may not sound like Blake right now,
Blake.
But that's
Blake
who
Roseman
we mean.
Is actually kind of oversees the small groups at Eastgate. And so, yes, when I say me, I always mean Blake.
Of course.
And the other thing is we're, in terms of, it's kind of like a small group. In the fall, we a lot of times start up our Wednesday night meetings. We used to do expository teachings through the Old Testament. We covered a lot of that territory before. Then we did a teaching the teachers class, where we were teaching people how to do expository teaching.
That happens about every other year.
Yeah, every couple of years we'll do that. And then we taught a theology class the last time around. And so we're praying about it. If you guys want to be praying about it, the next thing, I'm inclined to do a short class, more like a survey on church history. I think that it's, to me, that's an interesting subject. I don't know how many people would be interested in it. Would that be the thing? When I say church history, what happens to you? Your eyes glaze over? Or?
I think of the Catholic Church right away, which I don't know a whole lot about. I don't know if that encompasses most of church history, but...
Well, it encompasses it up to a certain point in time when there's a divergence. What's fascinating is I just read a book that Stan LaCane gave me to read. Actually, he gave me a copy of it to own. And I have to confess, I've never actually read a church history book from the Catholic perspective. This is called The Catholic Church, A Short History by Hans Kuhn. And it was a very balanced history. It was very, very honest representation of, you know, the good and the bad. I found it fascinating. I felt short-sighted in not having done this before. Hmm. So that was a lot of fun. Interesting. So anyway, pray about that. We're praying about that. We're praying about where to go after Matthew. So be praying about that too.
Yes, Matthew comes to an end at the end of August.
Yes.
Rob, if y'all don't know this, lays out usually at the beginning of a book, which often will take a year or more, when he's going to teach each verse every Sunday, and it's in our Eastgate calendar. And so that way he knows what's coming up and if he's going to have a guest speaker, what they might be speaking on and that kind of thing. So we've known for a little while that it's coming to a close soon. So there's just a few more teachings. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think,
I'm
about six
about
more.
It.
So he has an idea.
I do.
Of what he might want to teach on.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he wants to talk about it now,
I don't.
But think about anything he's not taught on before. You can look that up, and that might be where he's leaning towards. And speaking of guest speakers, we had Matt Green teach a couple of Sundays ago. We were out of town for a family reunion. It is my son-in-law, so I might be a little biased, but we felt like he did a great job.
I thought it was awesome. I thought I was so happy with that.
He did the Teaching the Teachers course, and it was not the first time that Rob had taught Teaching the Teachers course. It was maybe the second or third time before Matt ever took the classes. So I just thought he was not ever interested in doing that. And most of you would know that he's our main worship leader. He's the head worship leader, whatever you call it. And so you've seen him before, but never seen him speak. And I just did a great job. We were very proud of him. And so if you get a chance,
like you said, I just did a great job.
He just did a great job.
I would just like to say that Matt was awesome and I really
yes,
take credit
take
for that.
Yes, we take the credit for it. Yes, and you're welcome.
Yeah, no, I could actually listen to him teach more. That was really enjoyable. And there's something about the way he represented the text, just even something in his voice inflections, that just was comforting to me.
Comforting
at the same time, I was deeply convicted by
yes.
what was being presented. So I liked that.
I think I heard you word it like it was like he was throwing a brick at us that was coated in feathers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I might have said that
so
on
yes,
Sunday morning.
It was
yeah.
convicting, but very well spoken without condemning in any way. So.
So anyway, yeah, that's the stuff that's been going on at Eastgate.
Yep. Church or Christendom in general, is there anything that's been going on or that you wanted to talk about?
Well, there are always things going on. It was a very discouraging a couple weeks ago. Things got very discouraging for me just in terms of the evangelical church landscape. You may or may not be aware that Eugene Peterson was interviewed by Religious News Service, and I don't even want to go into the specifics of what was talked about just because it's not something I feel like I want to embroil not only my own ministry, but our church in, but a controversial, what, for whatever reason, we've decided to make a hot topic in evangelicalism. The question was posed to him and he didn't answer it in a way that would have made conservatives happy. And oh my gosh, the internet just lit up with everybody saying these horrible, horrible things about a man who's given his entire life to serving Jesus, pastoring people, preaching funerals, doing weddings, visiting people in the hospital, preaching God's word, and providing magnificent insights. And because he said the word yes in an interview, all of a sudden everybody was going to throw that over. I can't think of a time I've been more ashamed of the evangelical church, but it got worse because the very next day, Christianity Today interviewed him and asked him about this. And he said, listen, it was a phone interview. I answered one way. As I think about it and pray about it, I probably would say no. Okay, mm-hmm. So we got a yes here. And then he comes back with a no. And again, the issue to me is ancillary to the attitude of the heart that's represented right now in the evangelical church. And so then the internet lit up again. And so people who were not conservative, people who are more progressive on the other side came out, calling him names, calling into question his,
entire life's work, basically.
Not only his entire life's work, but what it was that was motivating him. People were accusing him of being motivated by money and book sales, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, you follow a guy, I certainly don't know him, but based on the interviews I've heard before and the writings that I've read a lot of, neither one of those answers surprised me one way or the other. And here's what is discouraging to me. This is probably the most heartbreaking thing that I can think of when it touches the church right now. We are buying into the culture's Twitter mentality. Mm. We are polarizing in 140 characters or less. We don't really think about the issues. We don't dialogue about anything. We don't really take the time to investigate or learn what's going on. We see a single word answer and make a snap judgment. And I can't think of anything more ungodly than that. God preserve us from that.
But they definitely threw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, which is a very old-fashioned phrase, but it's
they threw the tub and everything else.
Yeah,
they
frustrating.
They demolished the bathroom.
Because this interview was predicated on his retiring.
Right.
Because he's 84.
He's 84 years old. So I'm sure in his mind he's thinking, this came none too soon. I should have done this a year ago.
And what, I don't know if everybody knows this. You would remind me of this all the time, I think, but not only did he basically rewrite the whole Bible, he was a pastor.
Oh, yeah.
A functioning, working pastor. Can you imagine doing that work all on the side and the many, many books he's written?
It's
and
unbelievable.
That kind of work. I mean,
well, I love the story that's told, that he tells. Or it was an interview I watched take place one time where Bono from U2 was really intrigued with his writing and really, really wanted to meet him. They were going to be in the same area at one time. And this is while Eugene Peterson was still working on The Message. And word got out to him that Bono would like to meet you. And he declined. He said, it sounds very nice, but I don't have time. And the interviewer said, yeah, but this was Bono. And Eugene Peterson said, yeah, but it was Isaiah I was working on. Ooh. This was Isaiah.
This like gives me goosebumps.
I know.
That reminds me of a magnet you got from a conference one time years ago. And they said, this is not a verse you see very often, but it's good to remember. I think we might even still have it on our fridge. It says, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down.
Oh, right. Yeah. Out of Nehemiah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So anyway, so that was discouraging. Everything calmed down, as is another thing about the way we seem to approach things, is that we create big bonfires out of issues, and then we get distracted by anything else that's shiny that comes up. And so happily, nobody's talking about it. I'm more than happy not to talk about it, except that I just spent how many minutes talking about it.
Well, it was a big thing.
And
I remember you even talked to Janelle about it, who's the head of the Eastgate. Who's the pastor?
Janelle is the pastor of Eastgate?
Of Kidsgate. Did I say Eastgate?
You said
I meant
Eastgate.
To say Kidsgate.
I was going to say, she was sitting in my chair behind the desk the other day, and I didn't know what's going on here.
She does do that sometimes when you're not around. But what her first thought was, oh no, our parents going to have a problem that I'm using The Message in my curriculum with the kids. And so, I mean, for leadership, it is a big thing when this type of issue comes up.
When it turns into a firestorm, an unnecessary firestorm, we always have to remember the gospel is shaped as the cross. Is the cross? What does the cross look like in this? What does the crucified Savior look like in any of these situations? When we get away from that, we're going to get away from the gospel. When we get away from the gospel, we're getting away from our mission and our purpose, and we become religious and mechanical. And Eastgate has spent the last 20-something years trying to work against the mechanics, work against the machine.
That's right. And I guess the thing I always come back to, too, this comes up a lot, is it seems to me so many times that Christians, we make decisions based on fear. And I think that him answering that a certain way, people thought, oh, I thought I knew who this was. Now I can't trust anything. Well, what do you mean? How can you, can't you use your mind still when you read
exactly. The
message or whatever? It doesn't. I don't know.
And I guess that's discouraging, too, is that we go on witch hunts, we become afraid. And that even goes back to what you were talking about earlier in the podcast about superstition. We tend to be extremely superstitious when it comes to this. We afford our enemy so much power.
Yeah.
And I don't
and believe... And not as much to God.
Exactly. Because I'm going to put my trust and hope in the one who triumphed over my enemy on the cross. And I'm going to believe in that triumph and not be afraid of somebody who has a differing opinion than myself. And not throw that person over as though they're some sort of heretic. Because we may not see eye to eye on one particular issue.
That's right. We trust God to keep our soul safe.
Right on.
Him.
So has anything funny been happening around Eastgate lately?
Well, I don't know how funny it is, but Surf and Girl finally happened again. We did have to put it off again 1 week, but we were able to do it the next week.
So if you,
it
was just if you don't know, like behind. If you're not in Florida, we've turned into Seattle or something. It just rains
strange.
Constantly.
Well, yeah, we've talked about this a lot and lamented because Florida always used to be sunshine all day with an afternoon thunderstorm, and then that clears up, and then we have our kind of a cooler evening. But it's been all flip-flop this year. We have rain almost the whole day and then just a little sliver of sunshine if we're lucky. But anyway, we did get to have Surf and Grill yesterday, and that went well. I think three young people got baptized.
Three young people got baptized.
That,
that
was really awesome. But something sort of funny happened out in the water while we were swimming afterwards.
You and I were just kind of hanging out, and the water was clear. There was a little bit of June grass, the long-bladed grass near the shoreline, but once you got out to the sandbar, everything was clear and crystal clear and clean, and all of a sudden, one of our friends down the way, I believe it was Mike, suddenly yelled out and said, "Is that a shark?" And just as I looked to where he was pointing,
it was right in front of us, and there came the fin out of the water. And I looked to you right away because you said, "Oh, no, 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 it's okay, it's a dolphin." I went, okay, and that's what I was hoping for, of course. But then...
Well, I just kept looking at it, and, you know, the water's refracted with the waves. There was a little bit of wind chop out there, and it just kind of looked like that tail made that sideways move. And so just for a moment, because I hadn't seen him come back up, and just for a moment, I thought, oh, that may not be. That may
you
not be
more
a
than
doll.
Think it. You said it.
I said it out loud. Okay, it's my fault.
You said, nope, that is a shark. And I said, I was surprised how long you stood there and kept looking in that way.
Because I was trying to figure it out. I was just talking out loud.
Have you not seen Jaws? This is the time we turn around and get out of the water. And I looked back behind me, and there was this lady with a couple of kids, and she was not too far from me. But I was like, we probably should get out. I think that's a shark. She never heard me. I mean, I really felt like it was right out of Jaws, where people just are so slow to react.
But I was getting closer to it and looking at it. And then I saw it come up and clearly saw the round shape on the head and the bottom. It was a dolphin. It was
and I
happy.
Said, it's over. Yeah, I'm still getting out of the water because now I don't trust you.
Okay.
You should.
I shouldn't have thought out loud. That's all. I should have kept my thoughts to myself.
But other than that, it was a beautiful day, and the weather was gorgeous, and the water really was nice. We got to go out there with
our kids. We got a couple days without rain.
I know. It really helps. Anyone who has seasonal affective disorder. Not naming names, but just saying.
I don't even know what that means.
Mm-hmm. It's called sad.
Whatever. It makes me sad just to hear you say that name. So, Robbie, let's highlight a key volunteer at Eastgate right now.
You know, we'll never run out of volunteers for this podcast.
We could just do a podcast about that.
I know it. And the funny thing is probably most of them would hate us for doing that because they prefer to be invisible. But this one sticks out in both of our minds, and that is the sweet, lovely Melissa Traxler.
Woohoo!
She's awesome.
She is.
We've known her for many years, and she... And I think most of you may know her, at least by looks, but she's a very quiet person and unassuming, and she does a ton of work Eastgate. She's very helpful for Janelle and Kidsgate. She's one of the regular teachers. She also will cover the front desk as needed at the Kidsgate check-in.
Hasn't she actually filled in as the leader, like overseer of the whole
She has. If Janelle
thing?
And Chrissy are both gone, she's the go-to person, who again is a volunteer.
And this is a person...
Staff.
Yeah, this is a person who has a full-time job as a general manager of a restaurant, a popular restaurant. Well, Pineapple Willie's.
It's a
popular restaurant here, and especially busy restaurant here on the beach.
And she's still there every Sunday.
Just works so hard, and she and her daughter Chloe are always there working hard and doing things for
us. And that's just one aspect. She talks to her boss, and she brings food many, many times.
When
almost any time we ask for people to bring food, hey, we're going to do a work day. anyone that can bring food. I mean, she'd bring ribs and amazing, yummy food from Pineapple Willie's. And
in fact, we could give a plug to Pineapple Willie's, because if you haven't had their ribs, they're amazing.
Great. And if you can eat on the bar, no,
the bar.
Not a bar. Well, they call it the Pier Bar.
What kind of restaurant have you been going to, lady?
You sit up on the bar. No, it's called the Pier Bar. And
no, it's not. Is it called the Pier Bar? No.
Yeah, I think so.
It's just the pier. You eat out on the pier. It's not
a bar.
Look
it up, y'all. Tell me I'm right.
Yeah. Look it up and tell me I'm right.
Anyway, it's a long pier that goes out almost over the water. I think the very end of it may be in the water a little bit.
No, it used to be.
Over the sand. Okay.
I think it used to be back before Opal.
Yeah. They had some repairs done after that, and they got wiped out a little bit, but they rebuilt. And anyway, if you can sit out there, that's one restaurant I do like to take friends and family to when they come, because I feel like it's such a great representation of Florida. And the further you can get to the water, the better. But, you know, they kind of seat you one at a time. Either way, it's awesome.
And back to Melissa.
She's wonderful. And she always comes on work days. She's always helping, painting.
When we did that construction, I remember her over there all the time. I remember her laying flooring down there.
Right.
Just doing, I mean, it's incredible.
It sort of sounds like slave labor all of a sudden. It is a voluntary basis. Nobody's required to do that. But she shows
but she's
up
just got that kind
just
of a heart.
That kind of heart. Oh, and the other thing is, when we have the Kidsgate Bake Sale every year at Super Bowl Sunday, she doesn't just like buy something in Publix Deli. She makes the most ornate, amazing desserts that every woman is put to shame. And that's not her fault.
Why women?
She's amazing.
Why just women?
I don't know. The bakers. Let's just say the bakers. Men, women, children, whatever. She's amazing. And I know, I always feel like, I made a giant football out of cookie dough. And she has all these individually handcrafted things that are just beautiful. Yeah. I admire her for it. But
that is pretty impressive. But anyway, so, you know, people will say, Eastgate, man, it's such a cool, such an awesome church. The reason that it's an awesome church is because of Melissa Traxler and Chloe and all the many volunteers and people who come together to create this dynamic, unique community of grace out here on the beach.
Sometimes I think we both sit back in awe at what God has done
and
realizing that it was very inauspicious beginnings for Eastgate. And then we just stand back and say, God put this together.
Yeah. The amazing way that God draws everybody together to create this entity, this community of love and grace.
Okay. So I'm not sure how many people know this about you, but I wanted to tell everybody, because I think it's funny, that your dad was 60 when you were born in 1961, which means Papa was born in 1901.
That's
correct. Hilarious.
My father was born in 1901. He was older than me. He was 5 years older than me when I was born into this world. And it's no wonder he looked at me askance. What are you doing here? You've ruined everything. But
what was it you used to say? It's not that you had a generational gap.
We had a generational canyon.
Yes. Because at one point, your parents were separated.
Yeah, my parents separated when I was 9 years old. And
you and Papa lived together when you were 16 and he was 76.
I was going on 16. I was going on 16. He was going on 76, or he was 76. Or other way around. Doesn't matter. It's math, and I don't do that. But either way, it was a challenge. You should never put a 76-year-old with a 15-year-old in the same home.
I'm surprised.
I mean, actually, it would be hilarious. It probably somebody should have been filming it the whole time.
You both were very funny. You had a great sense of humor. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall during that time. I mean, I'm sure it was frustrating, but I hear the stories of the pot burning on the stove and you walking into the kitchen saying, did you want the stock?
No. I walked into the kitchen and saw that he had, you know, my dad could get distracted easily. And so he had put a pot of water on the stove. I think he was going to make Sanka. Do you remember Sanka?
That
was
that yes, old coffee. Boil water and
so he's going to make some Sanka and had turned it on and the pot had burned down and had caught on fire. And I casually walked by it because I'm 15 years old and that's what you do. I walked by it. I walked out to where he was and he was reading out in the front room and I tapped him on the shoulder and said, there's a pot burning out there. Did you want that like that? And he had some choice words for me at the moment. And later on, he's going, did I want that? Did I want that like that? But it was, you know.
That's awesome. The classic odd couple.
It was.
Really.
It was. Wish I'd have gotten to know him better. Mm-hmm. He was an interesting cat.
Mm-hmm.
But now you We talk about how you are someone who had moved from California to Indiana when I met you. But things that people probably don't know about you is that you were actually born in the Pacific Northwest. You were born up in Oregon.
I was. I was born in Portland, same place my mom and my dad were born, and I think my grandparents. We have some Indian heritage up there, which on our recent trip to Seattle, which we might talk about a little later, we saw a lot of our Indian family name up there, not family name, but the tribal names of Snoqualmie and Snohomish. And that was sort of fun. Bradley was with us, and he's done a lot of research in the family background. And I guess maybe that's why the clouds don't bother me, and I don't mind some rain. It's always very cozy to me.
It was so dismal and cold. I don't understand how people live up there. But, it was beautiful. But
I didn't like being cold. I'm not going to say I liked it. But at least when we're here in Florida, if it's a cloudy day, I'm okay with that. I guess that's where I get that. I don't know.
But anyway, so if you didn't know, Robbie is, well, one time we thought a 16th Native American. But now we're beginning to believe that's actually more.
And maybe a little more than that, because back in those days, being an American Indian was really kind of frowned on. You were looked down on for being Indian. That we think my great-grandfather lied to the census and said he was only half American Indian, when more than likely he was full-blooded American Indian.
That?
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting.
It is. It's fascinating to think of what our heritage is, where we all come from, all the various lines that draw together to make us the people that we are. And then you ended up with me and everything went downhill from there.
Nah, it's all better.
Whatever.
You were telling me stuff that went way over my head the other day, so maybe other people can get it. Andy Tatum, your reading buddy, was talking to you about some book, and I just smile and nod.
My reading buddy.
Yeah, he's your pal.
Well, Andy and I like to read a lot of the same authors, and he has bitten off a big project. He might have finished reading it. I don't remember. I think he said it's a 2-volume set, and it's by Greg Boyd, and it's and listen, for all my reform friends who hear me mention Greg Boyd and begin to panic, I go back to earlier in the thing. Let's not be superstitious or weirded out. We don't have to agree with everything, but if somebody's got an intriguing perspective on something, it's certainly worthwhile to look at it, contemplate it, pray about it, think about it. Anyway, he's written a 2-volume book called Crucifixion of the Warrior God, and it's a book trying to deal with how to reconcile Old Testament violence with the New Testament revelation of God through Jesus, who, the turn the other cheek, do no harm type of message.
That's a fascinating concept. And I think if it could be simplified for brains like mine, I would love to know the answer.
Well, and I haven't read the book. Andy's been reading it, and he sends me reports.
Well, he travels a lot. I think he's on the airplane a lot.
Yeah,
so
he is.
I don't know if he's reading them or listening them to him.
No, he reads. He reads
old school then.
But and then he kind of summarizes what the gist of what he's gotten out of it, and passes that along to me, and then oftentimes I'll end up reading the same book. He and I both read N.T. Wright's latest book at around the same time, and we like to discuss those things. But Boyd is going to be coming out with what I call for dummies version of this book. It's going to condense the 2 volumes down into a singular readable volume. And that's probably the one I'm going to tackle when it comes out at the end of August
or something. You do yourself a little disservice, but you do
well,
read a lot.
But I am busy too, and it's hard to read as much. If I had a 20-hour flight somewhere, it would be one thing, but I don't. And so I read as I can, and I'm looking forward to that because it sounds like a fascinating premise. Boyd has some very intriguing perspectives on things, and some of his concepts I have to puzzle through, and I'm not sure I'm completely tracking with him on some of it. Some of the open theism, I'm not sure exactly where I come down, but it's nothing I'm afraid of. I think it's a fascinating concept to look at, as opposed to the view of sovereignty that you'd find within the Reformed circles. Never mind. I'm sorry. I see the look on your face, so I should just shut up.
I'm sure there's some that totally follow everything you're saying, and I feel bad that I can't, but I'm glad that you enjoy it and you have a friend like Andy.
So have you been listening to anything or reading anything or watching anything that you're interested in?
Some of the same stuff we talked about last time, we're still watching, like Broadchurch and stuff. But I have really been loving, and I don't know that it's even just recent. I just have for the last several months really been enjoying the band Giants and Pilgrims. Is it
Giants? Yes. Yeah, Giants and Pilgrims, yes.
And especially their song Breaking Love. And I think what I like about it, it probably could be a worship song if everybody could handle the word damn in worship song. And I think most people at Eastgate could. But... that's not the line I like so much. I mean, it's fine. It's fine.
There's a customer being there. I love that song.
It doesn't bother me at all in the song, but it is very relationally based. It's a you and I kind of lyric in there, which I love as opposed to saying he and him. I feel like I'm communicating with God more directly when I can talk to him and say you and I. And the one line was, you and I share a heart since mine gave out. Mm. And then the other line is, you and I have a history before mine starts. And it's very poetic and pretty, but it's also very deep and heartfelt. It just really gets me. And
yes, I love that song. Actually, they've got a lot of songs. They've got a new album coming out soon. If you look them up, Giants and Pilgrims, you'll just have to do a Google search.
They're probably on YouTube. Usually you can listen to stuff for free on YouTube.
Yeah, they're definitely on Spotify. If you have a Spotify account, you'll find them there. And recommend that band highly. Enjoy them a lot. It's a husband and wife.
Oh, and, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they're artists. She's a visual artist and does paintings. And they come up with if you subscribe to their newsletters, you'll get like free wallpapers for your desktop and things like that.
Oh,
that
wow.
They come out with, or calendar wallpapers. And they've just got I've always appreciated the artistic perspective of faith. Mm-hmm. And I love how they've been able to harness that and say that. In fact, in Eugene Peterson, when he talked about why he was retiring, that's one of the things that he said that I love so much. It was a quote. He said, for 80 years, I've taken everything, I've mined everything that I've learned, and I've made art out of it.
Ooh.
And I think I'm done. And oh my gosh, I love that.
That
I
is
love
awesome.
That. And to be able to appreciate that artistic expression, whether it's the written word, whether it's a song, whether it's visual art. That creative aspect of what God does when his beauty is expressed in this world.
I will say that being able to enjoy the arts in our Christianity is a new experience, even though it's not that new, I guess, over 20 years. But that's part of something that the crazy church really quelched.
Yes.
It was very technical and very academic, and the arts were suppressed, I guess you could say, in some way.
They were. And honestly, they were suppressed for a long time within Protestant evangelicalism, largely, I think, influenced by the iconoclast movement. I feel like it carried over, that all of a sudden everything had to become pragmatic, that whatever we do, we have to do as an evangelical tool. Mm-hmm. To do something. And I always say that once we do that, if we begin to take our art and make it into a tool to evangelize or a tool to do anything, when does it quit being art and then become propaganda?
Yeah.
And I feel like we did a disservice to humanity when we became afraid of the arts. But that's
definitely,
you know what, we should do a whole podcast on that sometime, because clearly I have opinions.
That's right. So how are the Cubs doing, Rob?
Woohoo!
Finally, we hear some positivity.
Oh my gosh, coming out of the All-Star break, did they ever turn on the bats and the pitching and everything?
It's pretty exciting.
It really is. One thing I think that kind of fired everything up is that we acquired a pitcher during the break.
From White Sox.
Yeah, from the White Sox, Jose Quintana. And he came out and has just done an outstanding job. And then I don't know what it is. Our regular pitchers then all of a sudden just seem to be firing again. And then Kyle Schwarber came back and just has been hitting really well.
The bats have come alive for everyone. I mean, there's some that have been pretty consistent year round. I think Rizzo and Zobrist have done really well
pretty much the whole
season.
And Bryant. What happened to Bryant today? Do you know?
Yes, for the first time ever. I want to say Kobe Bryant.
Nope.
Chris Bryant, for the first time ever, actually got thrown out of the game.
He got ejected because it was a terrible call. There was a pitch way to the inside that he called as a strike. It struck him out, and Chris just got up in the face of the ump, and it wasn't
stood
really,
his ground.
He stood his ground, but I mean, it wasn't ugly or anything. It wasn't like kicking at him or something. But he was just arguing his case, and the umpire kicked him out. Ejected him.
Said for the first time he's ever had that. Now in the standings.
Yes, what are the standings, Robbie? You're the numbers person. Tell me what's going on.
We're tied for first.
Woohoo!
Oh, yeah. With Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
So, yes, we're happy about that. And Milwaukee needs to keep losing. We need to keep winning. We've had a good number of wins. We were just maybe 10 days ago or so, we were 5.5 games behind Milwaukee, and now we're tied.
Man.
So we definitely turning up the heat, which, by the way, just going to say that I said if the Cubs are going to do badly, I'd rather have it be in the early in the season than late in the season.
Well, so I just want to say that I've been positive about the Cubs the whole year.
This is all on record, folks.
I've always known that they were going to come out of it and that things were going to go well, that we would end up in the playoffs no matter what. And what's the hand up for? What does that mean?
To the hand.
Oh, whatever. I'm just saying that's the way it's been. I'm sure people have been listening to this podcast know that I've been very positive about my Cubbies.
Please email us with your feelings on this, everyone, so to make me feel better.
Whatever. Don't make her feel better. I'm always positive. What has anybody ever known me to be negative?
Okay, so the other thing about baseball.
Hey, didn't we go to a baseball game, a major league game?
We did. I'm actually wearing their shirt right now. I think I have a team shirt for every team sport I've ever been to in my whole life. I literally have my closet organized in logo sections and then girly shirts. And the logo section is like two or three times the size of girly shirts. I'm not a very girly girl. I'm sorry. I would think you'd be disappointed, but I'm my father's daughter. And my sister Madeline is the same way. And so as some of you may have noticed that we were gone for a while, and it was for a family reunion out in Portland and then the coast in Oregon, and then we ended up in Seattle. We all wanted to go to a Mariners game. I've never been to a Mariners game, and it was so much fun. We got there when the gates opened, and we stayed an hour or so after the game, and as soon as I walked onto the stadium, I just went, almost had goosebumps. I'm like, this is my happy place. I love this. I love this here. It's so much fun, and just had a lot of family members there. Probably 15 or 20.
20 at least.
20.
Yeah.
So many that our name showed up on the Jumbotron.
Yes. Welcome, Magadan's family.
Yes, that was the German side of our family, Magadan.
But that was exciting, and our whole section was cheering and excited to see that
on
the screen. And what? We got to go down to the bullpen to watch the pitchers warm up.
Yeah, fans can stand right next to the bullpen. You can almost touch the pitcher warming up. And Bradley knows all things baseball. I basically just know the Cubs, but I didn't know anything about the King. That's what they call him. Felix Hernandez was their pitcher, and he's called the King. And my sister Madeline, who
is also a baseball fan.
Oh my gosh, we have so much in common. She said, oh, I'll be down there at the pitcher's mound because I have to watch for the King. I didn't even realize he was pitching today, and I'm so excited. So she went down there and stood for probably 2 hours.
Holding spots down there right on the rail so that we could look at the warm-up.
She wanted an autograph, but it's kind of bad luck to sign a baseball before the game.
It would be really bad luck if you're signing a
football.
Really
bad.
That's like the worst thing.
Or
especially if you take a hockey puck down there and ask them, please sign this.
Yes. And he just kind of didn't even give her the time of day, which was sort of sad. But she was fine. She totally got it. Yes.
And he pitched a great game. It was a shutout game.
4-0. They won against Oakland.
Yes, the Oakland A's.
Mm-hmm. And then another thing happened while we were all standing there. My nephew got an autograph from someone else on the Mariners team. He's a left-handed reliever. I'm not sure what his name was, but he had written something on the baseball. And he asked me, do you know what this is, Aunt Robbie? And I'm like, CL, and then these numbers. And I'm like, no. And I thought, I went to my son, Bradley, like I said, knows everything about baseball. He goes, Mom, it's a Bible verse.
It's a good thing we started a church.
So good. Well, it was a weird... Colossians should be abbreviated CO,
yes,
not CL.
Correct.
It totally
so he did that
me.
Wrong. That is on him. But he is a baseball player, and we should have known better than
we
that.
I didn't know.
I mean, I didn't see it.
But
that's why I'm recused from this, because I wasn't involved.
Yes, you would have known immediately. Mom.
Immediately.
And you would have had the verse memorized.
Totally.
You would have had to look it up like
completely.
Bradley and I did. But it really was cool. And honestly, I'm going to say, I don't know if anybody that does that really hopes that it means anything, but I honestly think it's something that meant something to my nephew.
It did.
We read it to him, and it was Colossians 2:23 and following, and it reads, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward." And so he looked a little confused, but basically Bradley and I just explained that he's saying that do everything for Christ, including your pitching.
And he, honestly, it meant a lot to him. He came running up to me. I mean, this is a young man. He's not in his 30s yet, is he? He's only in his 20s.
Yes.
But I mean, he comes running up to me to show me that and told me what it meant, told me what the verse was.
Yeah.
And I thought that was awesome.
It was really cool. It was.
You know what? God's word is just powerful. That's the bottom line to it. That it doesn't matter even really where it's coming from or what. If we get that word out there, it's going to have the power to change and reshape and make us new.
So that's not a thing.
That's not a thing?
That's right.
That is not a thing
mm-hmm.
in all this time.
I know what we thought it was. Another misquoted Bible verse, spare the rod, spoil the child. Ain't there, y'all.
What? It's not there?
No, but the closest it is Proverbs 13:24. And it's similar to that. Sorry, I'm trying to pull it up right now. I had it up, but then I moved. But it's not exactly that. And what it says is, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him.
So daughters are off the hook altogether.
Right.
Clear, altogether.
They don't count, apparently, in any way. It is, though, something that is quoted directly from a 17th century poet named Samuel Butler. And that was like a direct quote from him. And I guess people thought it sounded biblical. And so they started passing it on.
So a guy wrote a poem about spanking.
Well, it wasn't all about that. I started to read it. My eyes glazed over really quickly.
Terrible.
It's a long poem. But that's a direct quote from that. And so it's a slightly different concept in God's version.
Yeah, it is. And you know, honestly, I mean, that's one of the verses that most people will point to when wanting to employ like corporal punishment within the disciplinary structure of their household or with their children. And this is, we could kind of roll into a little marital or child rearing advice mm-hmm. on this. That's one of those things that, you know, the Hebrew word for rod in there can actually be translated several different ways, one of them being scepter. And there are many, I would consider to be conservative scholars who do believe that the concept that's being pointed towards in that is not necessarily just the idea of like spanking, like taking a rod mm-hmm. or a stick and beating a kid with it, but is talking about authority, that making sure that there is authority represented there in the home. That if you don't, as a parent, create boundaries
yeah.
or enforce those boundaries with your authority, it's as though you don't care. You hate your child. It's as though the child means nothing to you.
And absolutely. So, I mean, they need that. They need direction. They need boundaries as much as they kick against them and mm-hmm. complain and all that.
You know, and every parent has to make the choice and prayerfully has to make the choice as to how they're going to enforce those boundaries. And that's basically what that's talking about. The authority is represented in a variety of different ways. And there's a lot of different ways. There's a lot of creative ways in
absolutely.
Which parents can go about enforcing boundaries. I'm not somebody who is dogmatic one way or the other. I know that we raised our children a certain way. I'm not even going to say how we came down to ask our kids, see how they came out with that whole thing, because I know it's a sensitive topic. And I certainly, to me, it's an ancillary issue. Each parent should prayerfully consider that. And I don't think there's a wrong answer, as long as you're coming down on the idea of creating boundaries that are lovingly enforced in a consistent manner. And that's what we did. I mean, that was our thing. We picked out a few things that we felt like were very important for our children to embody
yeah.
and respect, because they touched a larger societal element.
Right. And honestly, that was some advice that was given to us. And if you all don't know, our children, we have four children, they were all born 14 to 18 months apart. So we had like an invasion happen to not just us, but wherever we went.
Poster children for bad planning.
We were an invasion. And I think one of our main goals as parents was not to
lose control of the house.
Not lose control, but not be annoying to people around us.
Oh, that's true.
Wherever we went. And so it was a lot of whispering in their ears of, you better straighten up now or we're going home and you'll hear from us later. And for the most part, they were pretty good.
But they were children, and they're always going to be children. And the children are, you know, that's just the nature of the thing.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say, is that we had been given that advice, is obviously you can't correct every small thing, infraction that happens. There's going to be a ton of rules in the house. You can't follow up on every single one. So we picked two or three things that we said, these things are important. They affect each other. They affect the household. They affect others outside of the household.
Right.
Those we followed up on.
Because that's our role. We looked at things that were going to have larger societal impact.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what we're doing as parents is we're training these children to become adults and functioning members in a larger society.
Yes.
And so those were the things that we looked at. That's what we wanted to enforce and instill in them.
And our method was varied in degrees based on the child's personality.
Very much so.
I mean, some, just the threat of a discipline, they'd go crying off to their room, and
right.
the other ones, you know, would ball up their fists and say, what else you got for me?
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
And so,
but in each case, anytime that there was any sort of discipline presented, it was always done with clear explanation as to why we were doing it. We determined early on we were never going to react in anger. We would never just immediately deal with, you know, lash out either vocally or, well, we tried not to vocally. That sounds idealistic.
We'd stop the situation immediately if it was, had gotten out of hand.
Yeah.
But we'd try to be less emotional when it came time for punishment.
Yes. Anytime that there was going to be discipline, that was done in with cool heads. Because it was important to be able to explain what was going on. We wanted our children to know the process of what was mm-hmm. happening here and why. This is why we're doing this. This is what could happen if you violate these boundaries. And then, you know, reminding them that there's a bigger picture.
Of course,
a lot
of that sounds very detailed, which those details came as they were old enough to understand.
Yes,
when
that's
they were
true.
Very little, it was
no.
Stop it.
And I guess
you
that's even something you're not supposed
it.
To say now is no. And I don't know how you work around
that's
that.
True.
I'm sure there's ways to do it, just to be able to reinforce the reasonable boundaries mm-hmm. and lovingly enforce those boundaries.
Yeah.
With explanation. And listen, sometimes as parents we're gonna get it wrong. Sometimes our kids are in the right in something and we're enforcing a boundary or whatever. I remember in the crazy church, it was said, you never can let your kids know if you were wrong.
That's
because
right.
that just ruins the whole authority structure. That's just bogus.
And if, that was never your personality anyway. And even in the crazy church, you apologize to our children more than once.
Yeah, that just seemed nuts to me when I heard it.
Which was a big concept for me. I don't know why that bothered me. I felt like maybe ego or whatever, but I'm like, that's a sign of weakness.
But that's the thing. And that's the whole thing, is that our families are small communities, and communities operate by love and honesty and communication. And that's going to go every direction. So that includes the people who are in authority as parents.
Yes.
You know, if we get it wrong, the first thing we should do is admit that, apologize, get it straightened out, get it right. Because if we don't, and it comes to light later on, then every boundary that we created is going to come into question, and they'll wonder, well, was any of this right? Did I need
That's
to do
true.
Anything like that? So.
Well, I think it all comes back down to really it's the same philosophy of Christianity, and that is relationship. That if you want to simplify way a family needs to operate is in loving relationship and maintaining that at all costs, even when you feel like boundaries have been crossed. I mean, there were many times, you know, we were really sad at some of our kids' choices, but we just said, nothing will come between my love for you
That's right.
and what you've done.
And we expressed that
mm-hmm.
over and over, especially as they were adults and they were moving on. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we made it very clear, none of this affects how I love you. You are my child, and that will never change.
Absolutely.
So, Robbie, you got any financial advice for us today?
Just a little bit. I won't go on too long. I think we've been talking for a while. But a couple podcasts ago, we first started talking about money. And the first thing I mentioned was, if you want to try to get control of money, your money situation is start with trying not to add to your debt. So if you've conquered that, the next step would be to start making a plan, set some goals, and create a budget. One thing you want to make sure, I read this quote today on Twitter from Dave Ramsey, goals must be specific and measurable. So you don't want to be too vague, but you can start with a dream. Like, what have you always wanted to do? I've always wanted to, whatever, go on vacation here or there, or buy this or have this car. Start with that and then start making a plan to how to make that happen. And generally that's going to entail a budget, which a lot of people hate, but it does take some organization. Things don't just fall into your lap.
I'm a person who always hated the notion of a budget. I always did. You know, I kicked against that.
Yeah.
But I have found so much freedom in having a budget once we, you know, once I was able to wrap my mind around what we were doing and what it could result in, and then seeing the results of that, man, it made me a believer in it.
It's been almost 3 years since we've lived this way. And what I've noticed about a budget is it gives you freedom to spend.
Absolutely. Things that I never thought I could do, and freedom to be generous that I never thought I could do.
Yes. That is very rewarding.
It is.
Knowing you've set the money aside. You don't maybe spend it the day you get the money, but you have this period of time that's like, okay, whenever I want, whenever the need strikes me, whenever I have a need or whenever I have a desire to do this, this money is set aside for that only.
So if somebody is sitting down to make a budget, because I put myself in the position of somebody who doesn't know a lot about this, how would you start that? Where would you begin? What would be your first thing?
Well, the first thing you really need to do is start tracking your money. How much comes in, how much goes out. Don't worry about where it's going right now, but just start writing it down. This is how much I spend on groceries. You may be surprised sometimes. I've read some stories of like a family of two spending, you know, $3,000 a month on groceries, and they had no idea they were spending that much money. So just
because they'd go out and grab it.
That's right, without any thought. So start saving your receipts or whatever you're doing. You don't have to make a lot of changes at first, but start writing down what money comes in, especially if it's an irregular income. But either way, write it down and just start tracking it and start putting them in categories. And from there, there's a lot of online budget tools. They're all over the internet. I use the one on the DaveRamsey.com, and there's quite a few free. I was really cheap when we first started this. I still am, I think.
And, yes, I'll attest to that.
Okay. And so there's a lot of free budget helps online. And some of them you can just type the numbers in and they do the math for you, which
cool.
is kind of
That's
nice.
What I like. That's what I would need.
Yep. And that's where we started. And then eventually I moved on to a spreadsheet. And so we use that now. I use that. And that helps me get
And
through.
I hear the magical tales of mythical spreadsheets.
They're beautiful. So that's all. That's just, you know, a little bite size. You can delve into it as much as you're interested. You can kind of go from there. That's what I did. I just took it by the tail and moved on. But it does take 3 to 4 months to really make your budget start to work before you realize, oh, I forgot about this category. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Or this is bigger than I thought. Or this needs to be toned way down. We don't need that as much as I thought we would. That kind of a thing. So give it time to work. And you will always make adjustments on the budget. So that's good. But you've got to have a plan or it's just not going to fall into your lap. It doesn't just happen on its own.
That's right. Well, Robbie, I think we've taken up enough time for the three or so people who may be listening to this. Any kind of closing thoughts that you have?
I did see a quote that I liked, and I thought of you, and I thought of summer, and I thought of Florida. I'm sorry for everyone who's not living here in Florida with us that's listening. But I love this. And it said, an ocean breeze puts the mind at ease. And I think I read that on the Panama City Beach Twitter feed because there's so many people visiting this year. And I just love that. And I love the feel of that quote.
Yes, I like that too. And I agree with it 100%. Nothing puts my mind at ease more than being able to get down there to the beach and smell that salt air and feel the warmth of that sun and
it's
the softness
happy
of our
place.
Sand.
That's right.
It is. It is a happy place.
If you have any comments or questions about marriage, theology, finance, we'd love to hear from you. Just drop us an email at eastgatepcb@gmail.com. Thanks.
So for Eastgate, learning to love God, learning to love others.
This is our story so far.
Thanks for listening.
God bless you.